I'm Cynthia Canty, and this is Stateside. What we commonly think of as prohibition began in 1920. It was the start of the federal government completely and utterly failing to keep citizens from drinking alcohol. It took 13 years for the tide to turn against prohibition and for the 21st Amendment to make it legal to drink alcohol again. And now it seems that we're at a similar point in our history when it comes to cannabis. Voters in 23 states, including Michigan and the District of Columbia, have said yes to medical marijuana laws. And in November 2012, voters in Washington and Colorado made recreational pot use legal, at least as far as state law is concerned. Today's attitudes toward marijuana are truly changing. When and how did this begin? And are we really looking at the impending end of another era of prohibition? These are questions posed in a new book by investigative journalists Allison Martin and Nushin Rashidian. The title, A New Leaf, The End of Cannabis Prohibition. Allison Martin and Nushin Rashidian are with us now from New York. Good to have you here.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Allison, I'll start with you. What inspired you guys to pile into a red Volkswagen Beetle and hit the road for 3 years, 30,000 miles, and hundreds of interviews for this book?
Yeah, that's a great question. I still wonder myself sometimes. I'm from upstate New York, and I was very curious after visiting Southern California and seeing on Venice Beach very open cannabis use, cannabis consumption, recommendation clinics, and these sorts of things. And, you know, I asked Nushin, how can this possibly be legal? And she said to me, you know, and she's from Southern California, you know, I don't really know. And that was kind of the beginning of the thread that I continued to pull for a while. And, you know, my background is in health journalism, and I saw a real opportunity to explore the health and medical components and aspects of cannabis. And really, it was just a great opportunity as a journalist to really cover something that was pretty untapped at the time. We started working on this in 2009. And, you know, our goal was really to capture the moment in time. It was a really drastic shift that was happening very quickly between 2009, 2010, and about 2012, and it's still happening pretty rapidly.
Yes, we're certainly seeing that in Michigan. Nushin, I want to talk terminology. You guys call it cannabis throughout the book, and I'm wondering, why did you choose to not use that common term marijuana?
Sure. If you look back at texts and conversations basically before, you know, the Marijuana Tax Act passed in 1937 and started the prohibition, the common term used to describe this plant was cannabis, or in some cases hemp, Indian hemp, or the hemp plant. So really the term marijuana came about in the 30s when we were, as a country, kind of evaluating outlawing the plant and associating it with immigrants and these sort of minority populations. And really there was this like fear factor of, well, look at these people, look at these, in this case it was Mexicans, look at them and this marijuana that they're smoking. And a lot of people actually had no idea that this horrible, horrifying marijuana that they were bringing in was the same cannabis and Indian hemp that they were using for birdseed, they were using for medical tinctures. There was a really strong miscommunication at the time. So we decided to go with the term that researchers use, that scientists use, that is a more common term used across the globe, cannabis. Even though cannabis includes hemp, we still felt like it was a better term than sticking with marijuana, which seems in many cases to have very racist roots.
You take us back in history, and you touched on this, Nushin, reminding us that cannabis extracts and tinctures were used not only in the United States, but also in Europe.
This is true, right? So, yeah, cannabis has been used as a medicine across the globe for thousands of years. And where it started its migration west, I guess you would say, was, you know, when you had the English basically looking and observing the use in India. And they started noticing that they were using it as a medicine. And there was actually an Irish physician named William O'Shaughnessy who observed the use of cannabis in India and from there brought tinctures to England. And from there, it spread to eastern U.S. There was cannabis tinctures being sold in New York. I mean, so there was a time where cannabis was in the pharmacopoeia till the 40s, early 40s. And it was only in the process of prohibition that they had to make a strong argument during the legislation for the Marijuana Tax Act that, oh, well, you know, the medical uses are not common enough, not convincing enough for us to keep this plant legal. So You know, and obviously it never really went away. Research continued, and we saw medical cannabis pretty much start making its comeback in the 70s.
And what was happening in the United States when the push to make cannabis illegal began?
You know, what's really fascinating, it was the turn of the 20th century, and this idea of temperance was very popular. And one thing that Allison and I really thought about when we were writing the book was it was so strange that as a country we declared alcohol prohibition a failure and then thought, hey, this is a good idea. Let's, you know, embark on another prohibition. So basically it was just the attitude of the time. You had a fear of these substances. You had a fear of minorities. You had this move toward outlawing substances. And that all started at the turn of the 20th century with alcohol, with cannabis, with opiates, with, you know, cocaine. So it was just a mood that took over.
If I could jump in for a second, yeah, I think Nusheen summed it up pretty well. But, you know, the prohibitionist ideology that swept the country, it, you know, what we say in the book is that it was pretty easy to add another boxcar with cannabis with the tracks already laid. You know, there were no good substances at the time, especially intoxicating ones.
When did the push toward medical use begin? So they basically to try to take the boxcar off the track.
So this is Allison. So in the 70s, there was a young speechwriter, and this was kind of the first attempt to bring back medical cannabis. And in the 70s, a young man in his 20s named Robert Randall discovered that he had glaucoma. He lived in D.C. Long story short, he realized, you know, through the process of consuming cannabis one night that the joint actually reduced and or removed some of the halos that he saw as a result of the glaucoma. You know, as anybody would who was, you know, a young guy who didn't want to go blind, he was told that he'd go blind by 30. You know, he started consuming cannabis. Eventually, he was arrested and he went to Normal to seek help fighting the federal government for his right to consume cannabis. He actually won. He's one of the few people who can say, you know, he fought the law and he won, at least with regard to cannabis federally. And, you know, what's interesting about him is that, you know, when we look at medical cannabis today, you know, across the country, really, it goes back to Robert Randall in the 70s. You know, as a result of Randall, there was a federal program that was implemented where people could receive tins of cannabis joints. And, you know, eventually that program was shut down, but several people are still grandfathered into the program and still receive joints of cannabis from the federal farm in Mississippi today. So, you know, the more recent medical cannabis, as we know, it started in 1996 in California with their law that passed, which, you know, when we look at medical cannabis today, it's the landscape is very, very different across the country. And, you know, part of the reason people look at California and say, you know, oh, we don't want to become like California. The reason California became like California is because their law was actually only a page long. If you take a look at the laws that are passing most recently, they're tens, if not hundreds of pages long. So, yeah, that's kind of how we started to dismantle prohibition as far as medical cannabis goes.
And then did that in turn give an acceleration toward legalizing recreational use?
That's a tough question to answer. You know, I think medical cannabis does soften people to the idea of social use cannabis. You know, if you know somebody in your family who has or had cancer or glaucoma or, you know, HIV or AIDS, any of these conditions for which, you know, cannabis is a pretty proven therapy for, you know, anti-emetic, you know, reducing pain and these sorts of things, it's hard to remain hard toward medical cannabis. You know, if you are looking on the news every night or reading newspapers and thinking about family members or friends who use cannabis for medical purposes, it does start to, I think, open people's minds to other areas where drug law reform could possibly be useful, such as you know, mass incarceration, mandatory minimums. You know, there are other social uses applied to cannabis today that I think people open their minds to when they think about, you know, down the street, somebody using medical cannabis or even in their homes.
If you've just joined us, we're speaking with writers Nusheen Rashidian and Allison Martin. Their book is The End of Cannabis Prohibition, A New Leaf. So here we are in 2014. We have this crazy quilt of state laws that permit use of cannabis for medical purposes. We have two states allowing people to use it recreationally, and then a federal law that says, no, you can't. How did we get here?
So that's part of what led to us wanting to write this book. We've got four stances in the country, as you mentioned: medical, social, prohibition, and decriminalization. And that patchwork is frustrating for a lot of people. And it's what led to, when we were reporting the book, what we called the clash. You know, we witnessed, as we were reporting, you know, directly some effects of that clash. You know, people that we interviewed weeks later were raided, and now one person is still in prison, and other people faced, you know, seized assets. Other people's businesses were completely shuttered. Caregiver clinics were shut down. It was a fascinating time to be reporting for this book. Noosh, I don't know if you want to jump in as well.
Sure. Yeah, I think we got here because cannabis prohibition lasted, you know, 75 years versus the 13 years that we had for alcohol prohibition. And I think that we're not looking just at ending cannabis prohibition. This is really the sort of beginning of dismantling what a lot of people think is a failed war on drugs. So I think that it's a very slow process, and it's going to continue to be a very slow and messy process. And we might end up with a patchwork for a very long time, for generations, in the same way that you have dry counties with alcohol. That just might always be the case. But I think that a lot of the complication, a lot of the mess, though, comes from having almost a majority of the states at this point pushing against a federal government that basically has been unwilling to budge and has been pushing back, though it seems like that tide is starting to turn. So it's going to be like this state by state. It's going to be like this at the federal level. And it's going to be pretty complicated internationally, as we see, you know, Uruguay and other Latin American countries saying, hey, you know, we also don't want to fight this drug war anymore. We also want to legalize cannabis. So this is going to be a pretty interesting global shift.
Here in Michigan, as I touched on earlier, voters have already approved the medical marijuana law. And then there are softened laws on the books in 9 Michigan cities. That includes Detroit and Lansing, Flint and more. And we're expecting there'll be ballot proposals to legalize or decriminalize cannabis in some 20 communities all over the state. But then even when those local ordinances pass, police say, well, it's still not legal on the state and the federal level. Is this a case of supporters of legal cannabis working from the inside out?
Michigan is interesting, and I think it's taken the form of a lot of other states where some of the reform or push for reform starts with, you know, individual towns and counties that are perhaps more progressive on the issue.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Michigan is a really unique case because you don't see really any other state in the eastern part of the country with Michigan's, you know, medical cannabis makeup. It's a very, you know, as many would say, the Wild West. It's very California or Oregon or you know, how Washington was with just their medical system, where, you know, one example is, you know, High Times wants to bring their cannabis cup to Michigan. There's just this, a very broad segment of the population that supports this, yet what's very fascinating is that they still have what I guess you would consider a very old caregiver-based medical cannabis model. So I think that Michigan is definitely one of the states that's going to be ripe for cannabis legislation. It seems like the people are ready for it, you know, as evidenced by the fact that there are shops and medical cannabis businesses thriving when there's no legislation on the books saying they can. You know, that's definitely a pattern that people saw in Colorado, Washington, again, Oregon, California, these states that have forged ahead and are pushing for legalization. So I think Michigan is probably one of the first states this far east that's going to possibly go the cannabis legalization route.
Is this an issue that you've seen not just here in Michigan but across the country? Does it bring together and unite people from all political viewpoints and many different backgrounds?
I think that cannabis is interesting because it's becoming more and more purple by the day. I mean, you can't really say it's a Democratic issue. You can't really say it's a Republican issue. It's both, and it's also libertarian. You know, of course, now that hemp is involved, the industrial hemp production, you've got some really interesting states that are showing great deal of interest. You know, down south in states like Kentucky and Tennessee, you know, who would have thought that they would be, you know, leading the efforts for hemp?
Based on what you've seen, what you've heard through all these months of interviews and traveling, I'd like both of your thoughts on, do you see the day when cannabis will be legalized in the United States the way alcohol became legal again in 1933? And if so, when do you think that will happen?
So here's kind of how I think about where this country could be with cannabis legalization. I think the day very much could come when cannabis is legal for everybody in all states. And I think there will be, you know, certain counties and cities and, you know, municipalities that will have moratoriums. But I kind of liken it to a cruise ship and that, you know, this has been a very, very, very slow turn. So, you know, of course, it's unpredictable which way it's going to go, but we're very clearly witnessing a turn here. It hasn't been very quick. You know, this country's been working on drug law reform as far as medical cannabis since 1996. So, you know, I think the slow turn is going to continue. And I think that, you know, the federal government is softening to both medical and social use cannabis. I think medical cannabis is going to be a lot easier for the federal government to swallow. But yeah, you know, to pinpoint a date, I mean, I would really be pretty much like setting myself up for an incorrect, you know, kind of prediction here. But yeah, I certainly do think that there, you know, will be a day where, you know, drug law reform or cannabis law reform will take it to a point where it's legal.
Fair enough. You want to add to that, Nooshin?
Yeah, I think a majority of Americans are tired of cannabis prohibition. And I think that if we see in Colorado and Washington and other states to come that the tax revenue is being well spent, that these businesses are being kept in check, that youth and adult use isn't rising, and there aren't, you know, tons of traffic fatalities, I think that, you know, slowly, state by state, you will see the country go toward cannabis legalization. And eventually, I think the last stop on that train is going to be, you know, the federal government kind of moving out of the way. And the sooner they do so, though, obviously, the easier it's going to be for these states because they need, you know, banks willing to take their money. They need, you know, they need access to some of these areas where the federal prohibition gets in the way.
The book is A New Leaf, The End of Cannabis Prohibition, and we've been speaking with the authors Nooshin Rashidian and Allison Martin. Good talking with both of you. Thank you so much.
It's been fantastic. Thank you.
Thank you very much.